Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
And now. Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey folks, it's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for checking it out. Thank you for listening. As I always tell you, the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originate on my Sirius XM radio show, which is called Trunk Nation, and heard Monday through Friday live on volume, Sirius XM channel 106. Nightly re-airs 10 to midnight Eastern. Anything you want, anytime you want on the Sirius XM app. Appreciate you all tuning in, spreading the word about the podcast. If you only listen to this podcast and you're in the U.S. or Canada and you don't listen on Sirius XM, you're only getting a tiny, tiny fraction of what I do on a regular basis on the radio. Hope you come on board and join me every day on volume. Of course, there's a sixth show on Hair Nation on Mondays, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Terrestrial radio show, social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the website. Interview for you this week happened from my Vegas home studio a couple weeks ago. There are so many artists living and based in Vegas now. It's incredible. One of the reasons why I'm so happy to have a place there. And one of the guys that dropped by a little over a week ago was DJ Ashba, who has been a Vegas resident for over 10 years. And DJ, of course, you know best for having been in Guns N' Roses for a number of years. We touch on that. We talk about a band he had called Beautiful Creatures, which I liked a lot. We talk about what he's doing now. And of course, the band he has with Nikki Sixx called 6 AM. It's a great conversation. Here it is, DJ Ashba on this week's podcast. Here's a guy who saw this coming, the Vegas renaissance, if you will, of musicians moving here. We were just talking about it off the air, and he's been here now coming up on 12 years,
yeah.
And he is DJ Ashba. Good to see you, dude.
You too, brother.
You're my neighbor.
Isn't that crazy?
I didn't know you were like literally, when I bought this place, everybody's like, oh yeah, Ashba's right over there.
Yeah, I just left my house, and it said 8 minutes, and I was like, wow. This is awesome.
Well, we'll have to barbecue one day together.
Absolutely. This is insane.
What compelled you to relocate to Vegas? Because now we talked about how many people are here now.
Like, yeah.
It's either here or Nashville that the music community is moving. But you were ahead of the curve back in 2010.
Right.
What brought you here?
I was told a long time ago, the minute you finally make money, get out of LA. That's what I was told. So
smart.
Who told you that, by the way? I can't remember. I think it was Nikki, if I remember.
Who just got out of LA.
Yeah. And so the thing about it is the minute, you know, I got the gig for GNR and was all of a sudden went from being broke to having money. So I just saved. And 2010, I was like ready to buy my first house. And that was it. And it was just common sense. I don't know anything about real estate. I literally lucked out. And Vegas was that place when you have a breakup. It's like the go-to spot, the happy place, you know? And I was like, if I can live anywhere in the world, why not Vegas? You know, I've lived in LA 22 years and I was looking for houses there, and it's like shoeboxes for the amount of money. And so it was just like common sense. Like, why would I buy and live here if I could, you know, live a 3-hour flight away?
No state tax.
In a palace for the same amount.
Right.
So,
three hour drive flight, 45 minutes. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So, and now so many are here. It's crazy. And obviously anything you want is here, and LA is right there, but it's changed a lot, right?
Big
time. It's just blowing up.
Yeah. Because when I bought my house, I live on a golf course and I never saw a neighbor for 4 years. I mean, the economy is so bad. 2008, everything crashed.
Right.
2010, it wasn't much better. So I happened to get this really nice house for, you know, a great, great price, and moved in, never saw a neighbor for 4 years. Cause I found out a lot of the big houses over on the golf course are people's vacation homes.
Mm.
So 4 years later, I remember hearing the neighbor for the first time and freaked out. I mean, it was like the apocalypse. Walking through the neighborhood, didn't see a soul.
Yeah.
It was creepy almost.
Yeah.
But I loved where I lived and I loved the house, and now it's just booming. But now the house is worth three times what I paid, and it's insane.
Yeah.
I just lucked out.
Yeah, it really is. It's pretty interesting to see what's happening here, and it's really very cool. And I've always wanted to have a place here. I'm still part-time, but hopefully one day I'll be full-time. And it's just to see it just blowing up like it is awesome, and such a great music community here. You originally, for people that don't know, you're from Indiana originally, right?
Yeah, I was born there.
So when you uprooted, how old were you when you pulled up left the family and went for the dream in Hollywood?
I moved out when I was 16 and lived in a trailer out in the outskirts of town. And I moved when I was 20, because in my mind, I would have moved sooner, but 20, I was like, if I get out there, I can't play bars unless I'm 21. So that was my mentality.
Right.
How am I going to live? What am I going to do? And so it was like 10 days before my 21st birthday, I did the drive in a little purple minivan and the little U-Haul on the back, listening to Bat Out of Hell all the way there.
Yeah, I mean, you're an adult at 20, so you can do your own thing, but were your parents supportive of you doing that?
Not really. I mean, I'm from a very religious family, so I grew up without TVs. It's called Apostolic Christian, so it's like the Amish with electricity, basically.
Oh, wow.
So it's really strict. Like, you can't wear jewelry, makeup, nothing. And that's probably why it turned out the way
I was going to say. You're covered in tattoos
and
you got a makeup and you got a thing in your lip. And so you went hard the other way when you got out of there.
Yeah. No TVs till like 21 in my
now
house.
You got 21. That's funny. You actually said that before we got on the air. You go, dude, I got 21 TVs in my house.
But I don't watch TV. That's because I didn't grow up watching TV. So it's a weird thing, but it's a comfort thing, I think.
Right.
If you need a TV, I got tons. I got 32 and under my stage in the warehouse.
I just bought a couple. I wish I would have known from my place. I could have come over and bought them from you.
Oh man, I would have given them to you. I have so many TVs. It's
so parents weren't so down with it, but you go for it. And when you get to LA, correct me if I'm, was Beautiful Creatures the first thing?
No, it was a band I joined. Well, I knew one guy in LA. LA. And his name was Vince Aquat. And he was with a cover band that used to be an original band called Barracuda. And they were all from Chicago. And he invited me out. And I went out to visit. And I knew, I was like, I got to move here. This is it. You know, and I moved. I flew him one way and he helped me do the drive out. Let me stay in the band house, and I joined Barracuda, and we literally played cover songs every night of the week, all up the West Coast.
What were you playing? Like, what kind of stuff?
All the classics, you know.
Hard rock?
Hard rock. Anytime you go see a classic rock band, it's the same covers, pretty much, you know.
I'm assuming Barracuda by Heart was the big moment.
Yeah, that's the big encore. But I guess they had, back in the day, like one song on MTV that did pretty well. I don't know much about the band.
So you're working though. You're doing covers and you're working and you're living in LA and you're young and
yeah.
Where did Beautiful Creatures come in?
That came.
You were in Bullet Boys.
Well, yeah, I mean,
who just imploded again today, by the way. So they might need to get somebody to work with them. Yeah.
Me and Mark don't get along.
Well, apparently, there's others he doesn't get along with either because the whole band left again today.
Yeah, yeah, he's got some issues. But I was friends with Lonnie, and Lonnie, they something happened to their guitar player, and it was kind of my first opportunity. I was like, yeah, you know, I'd love to fill in. It was just a fill in for one tour, something like that.
Okay.
And I think I left the tour early because I kind of butted heads with Mark. But that was kind of the first little taste of getting out there. And I met Joe Lestay out there.
Was Bang Tango on the bill?
Yeah.
Is that how you met Joe?
Yeah. So we met Joe through, it was Enough's Enough, Bang Tango, and Bullet Boys.
Okay.
So after that tour, I remember Joe coming up, he pulled in my driveway, and I looked out and I said, if he's here to get me to join Bang Tango, he can fuck off. But he knocked on the door. He was just like, so cool. And he's like, hey man, do you want to start a new band? And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And that's kind of how Beautiful Creatures started.
That record was great, man.
Yeah,
that first record was great. Why do you think it didn't happen?
I don't know. I think it was maybe a little too ahead of its time, maybe. I mean, it was a cool record.
Cool record cover, too, if I remember. Wasn't it like a BC and like silver
on
black? It was really cool packaging. Yeah. I have the CD still. I mean, really great record.
It's a fun record. It's something I will always be proud of, that record. And I kind of... really, with Sean Bevins produced it, but he really helped me kind of hone in my style. I would say he really pushed me hard as a guitarist, and I was young. He introduced me to a lot of really cool effects pedals and a wah pedal, which I'd never used before, and spring-loaded Morley wah. So instead of playing it like a real wah, I just played it like a kick drum. So it more of a rhythmatic thing, and you know, wow, 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 you know, gave me a, you know, and once I plugged that in, you know, it just was like opening a whole new door for my playing, you know, and it was really fun, from the whammy pedals to the wah pedals and the envelope filter on 1AM, which is a cool effect, you know, it was a cool pedal, which I've carried on to, you know, Skin or, what was 6AM song? We've written so many, there's a 6AM song that I use the same pedal, and I can't even think of it because we release like 90 songs.
Well, we'll get to 6AM in a second here. But on Beautiful Creatures, was it demoralizing for you to have that record not happen? Like that was like, because that's really your first major thing.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
you know, we were doing really cool tours. We got Crew Fest. Before that, we had Ozfest 2001. And that was our first, I guess before that, our first gig ever was opening up for Kiss. Ted Nugent pulled out, or he was banned from Detroit or something weird. And we just, luckily, we were on Warner Brothers, and we got the call to do it. And I remember we were pulling into the, it was an outdoor amphitheater and in Detroit, which is huge for, obviously, Kiss, you know. We're pulling in, and I mean, people for days. And I remember we still didn't have a band name. We were rolling in there. We didn't have Beautiful Creatures. And Joe's like, what are we going to call ourselves? We need a name. And the label was really pressuring us to get a name before they would release the record. And it was going to hold up the record. We could not come up with a name. We played under Ego Star.
That was the name?
For that first show.
That's not a bad name.
Yeah. Joe's like, I don't know, something star would be cool. I go, let's go with Ego. And I don't know, it just happened in the van pulling into the venue. So on stage for the first time, he's like, we're Ego Star. And so,
it's not a horrible name, actually.
Yeah.
But then you decided not to hang with it, obviously.
Yeah, so I remember we had a big dinner meeting with peeps from Warner Brothers, and we were walking in, and Joe's like, dude, I can't think of a name. I go, I can't either. And they said, if we don't have a name, they're holding the record up. And we walked in, we're walking down Sunset or Hollywood Boulevard, and some dude just handed us a business card promoting some play he was doing. And we picked it up, and it said Beautiful Creatures. I go, that's it. And we walked in, and yeah, we want to call it Beautiful Creatures. And we rolled, completely stole some dude's fucking, and that's how it happened.
But you, so you left the band. They continued for a little bit after you. I think they've actually made a second record, right?
They did.
I think, right? Yeah. But you, did you leave because you had another offer at that point, or you were just demoralized? You didn't think that was going anywhere?
I was pretty crushed. So what happened is when Tom Wally came into Warner Brothers, and Tom really, for some reason, liked me and kind of, I don't know if Joe rubbed him wrong. We went to his house party, and Linkin Park was there. Everybody was there, and we were out on Ozfest, so he invited us over. And I think Joe got drunk and said something stupid like, "What? How does it feel to have a real rock band on your label?" He's talking to Tom Wally from Warner Brothers.
Yeah, people that don't know, Tom is a major executive player in the music industry in terms of signing bands and president of labels. I knew Tom back in the day. So, yeah, he's a major guy.
And Tom is awesome. And Tom has always had tons of showed me nothing but respect. And so what happened is, I guess that rubbed him wrong. Whatever happened.
Go figure.
The next day, we were like dropped off the label.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The next day, we got called into a meeting, and Gloria Butler, who's Geezer's wife.
Right, I know Gloria.
She managed the band at the time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know she managed you guys.
She introduced me to Sharon.
You know, they're here now, too.
Yeah. So, so many stories. But I was in the studio doing the Beautiful Creatures record. Guns N' Roses was in the next room recording Chinese. We went off and had a whole career tour, came back, and they're still recording Chinese.
You could have done 10 tours and they were doing Chinese Democracy.
But what was cool is Sharon introduced me to Axl. So it was just this weird thing. I was in the studio in between takes, and Sean was having problems with some. I picked up an acoustic, and I'm waiting around, and I start playing D.
Now, wait, this is the first or second Beautiful Creatures
first,
record?
First one.
First record.
I only did the first
record. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm in there playing D, and all of a sudden, I look up, and this lady's in the doorway crying, like tears. And it's Sharon. And I was like, she goes, "You got to play that for my husband." And I was like, whoa. You know, it was incredible. And
you mean D, the instrumental?
Yeah.
Right.
By Randy Rhoads.
Right.
And Gloria, and so Sharon goes, "Axel's in the next room. I'd love to introduce you, Axl." So I went over there. Me and Axl are both from Indiana. And
was Sharon involved with Guns at the time at all?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think she was. I don't believe so. I think she was there to visit Gloria, because her and Gloria are great friends, obviously.
Right.
And she took me over. I met Axl. He was dope. It was really cool to meet him finally. And that was kind of that story.
So that's the first time you met Axl Rose. You're doing Beautiful Creatures. They're working on the 13-year odyssey of Chinese Democracy.
Yeah.
And then you guys, the Indiana thing comes into play, I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Were you from the same area of Indiana?
Very close, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm from Monticello, so we were like 45 minutes away from each other, so
right.
It's really close.
Do you have mutual friends or anything?
No.
He's older than you, obviously.
Is, yeah.
10,
yeah.
Good 10, 15 years, probably.
Yeah.
But so that was the initial meeting, and then you guys go your own ways.
Yeah,
there.
We went our own ways. I went off to tour, and then go back to the previous conversation. We get dropped. We go into this meeting with Gloria, and good news and bad news, guys. Throws down a contract, and they said, bad news is Tom's, you know.
Tom Wally,
Tom,
the guy who runs
dropping
the
band.
Label is saying,
he's dropping
fuck
the
you.
Band, but right in front of the band, they drop a contract, say, but he wants to sign you as a solo artist.
You, DJ
In front Ash. Of my band.
Oh, wow.
The band I helped start, create, write the songs. And, you know, and I was young. I probably should have said, fuck it, let's roll. But, you know, being from Indiana, I'm very loyal to my friends. And I was like, fuck that. And I walked out of the room and never signed the contract. And that was kind of that. And that was kind of the end of the original lineup, you know.
Right, right.
And then I just went off into kind of a really depressing hiding for about a year or two, writing songs and you know, met Nikki at Randy Castillo's funeral. And because I played on a cover album with Randy. Ted Nugent tribute record. and that's how I met Nikki.
So when you meet Nikki, Nikki Sixx, of course, is who we're talking about. You You guys, do you immediately connect? Is he aware of your history? Is he aware of what you've done at that point?
Yeah, we really didn't talk much at the funeral. You know, he was really cool. Came up, said, "Hey, you know, I didn't think he knew anything about me." It was very quick, and then fast forward, I got a call from Danny Wimmer, and he was working on a band, managing a band called Operator, and wanted me to join that band. And
Danny Wimmer, the concert promoter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so I said, yeah, let's do it. And it was on, I believe, Interscope. So it came down to they wanted me to sign the deal and join the band, right? Well, I think it was like the day or two before that was all going down, I get a random call. I have no idea how he got my number. Nikki calls me. I remember I was at the car wash on Ventura. And he goes, "Hey, bro, it's Nikki Six." And he goes, "Blah, blah, blah. What are you doing today?" I go, "I got rehearsal in like an hour." And he goes, "Hey, do you mind if I come down and watch your rehearsal?" And I was like, what the fuck? Like, number one, how does he even know me? I only said hi to him at a funeral.
Right.
How did he get my number? And why the fuck would he want to waste his time coming down to watch? So I found it really bizarre. But I said, yeah, fuck, that'd be killer. Didn't think he'd show up. He showed up, sat through the whole rehearsal. Really bizarre.
This band Operator.
Operator.
Yeah. Okay. And what kind of music was that?
It was heavy.
Okay.
Heavy. Aggressive heavy.
Did anything ever happen with them?
No.
Okay.
Not that I know of. And afterwards he walked out in the parking lot and said, "Hey, I wanted to invite you up to the house and write some songs with you." And it was weird. And I went up there and we wrote four songs that day. And he goes, "If you don't sign this deal, I'd like you to partner up with me at Funny Farm as producing writing partners, and we can write and produce for other people." So I ended up saying, "Fuck yeah, dude, it's fucking Nikki Six."
So it wasn't with the intent of 6 a.m. It was more of just like writing, production, let's be partners. It wasn't really
never
we're
going
to do a band
six,
together.
Never, never.
And when did that come
up? We still don't look at ourselves as being in a
band
together.
It is kind of a weird thing because 6 a.m. is this thing that kind of pops up every once in a while and then goes underground and up and down. But where does James Michael come into it then?
So, you know, at the time, James was a producer in town. I never knew he sang, ever. I worked with him for many years. I would be the guy he would call if he needed a guitarist on somebody's album. So I'd do a lot of studio work for James.
Did you do a lot of ghost stuff that we don't know about?
Some stuff, yeah.
Anything you can talk about? Anything we'd know? And he's like, "That's really me."
Motley.
Well, Saints of Los Angeles, you co-wrote most of the record, right?
And
did you contribute some guitars to it?
I played all the rhythms on it.
All the rhythm guitars?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Mick was awesome. Mick was actually in the hospital at the time.
Dude, I don't want to get in trouble,
yeah,
man.
I don't know.
All right.
But it's one
how
of those...
about how about non Motley related stuff? Like you hear from these guys, like, yeah, it was actually me that played on the first Winger record or the first Warrant record is really Mike Slammer back in the day.
Yeah,
like
I played.
That's
on...
all come out now. Is there stuff like that?
I worked with a lot of people. I worked with Neil Diamond. I worked with so many people. Drowning Pool. Me and Nikki worked with Drowning Pool in the very beginning, and it was awesome. I mean, you know, I've learned a ton, you know, along the way, from you know, everybody I've worked with. It's been a lot of fun. You know, we've had a long history, me, James, and Nikki, and James, like me and Nikki became writing and producing partners out at Funny Farm. And I learned a lot.
What was Funny Farm? Was it his own studio?
It
was his thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I learned a lot from Six. You know, he kind of took me under his wing as my big brother. I still look up to him like that, you know, and he's always just been, you know, a mentor. I mean, he was the first dude I've ever seen live in concert when I was 16 was Motley Crue. You know?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really cool for him to kind of, you know, bring me on board, and we worked together on a lot of different people's stuff. So it was a lot of fun. And 6 a.m. was just kind of a fluke. Nikki wanted to, he dug up the, you know, some diaries from his storage, the Heroin Diaries, and basically came in with the idea of, and the intent of, originally we were just going to write a bunch of songs to bring it to life musically. And never once was it a band thing. In fact, we were just going to release a soundtrack to the book and have different singers. I remember he called up tons of different people. Like we were in talks with Chester to do a song.
Chester Bennington.
Yeah, different singers. And, you know, James one day, he was like, "Hey man, I'd love to take a crack at it." And we're like, "All right." Had no
idea.
Neither
of you guys knew he could sing.
No, because he was just such a producer. So he's very to himself. You know, he's more of a, I would say more of a, he's a genius behind the desk in a studio. It's incredible what he can do, but he's more, I would say, a recluse. He's very much doesn't really come out of his,
which is not what is traditional for what would be a singer frontman,
exactly,
which is his role in 6 a.m.
exactly. So when he sent over the demos, everybody was floored. Like me and Nikki's jaw dropped. I remember we were like, "Holy fuck, not only are you singing on this song, you're singing on every single song." We were blown away by his voice, and that was it. And still at that point, it wasn't we're a band. We wrote the whole record, turned it in. It was just a soundtrack. They released it. We came up with a name just to come up with, and it was 6 a.m. I came up with the name. I remember calling Nikki and I said, "Why don't we call it 6 a.m.?" And he goes, "What do you mean?" And I go, "Like 6 Ashba Michael."
Yeah.
But spell it with the colons and the periods and kind of like a timestamp. But, and that's kind of how that came about. And, you know, and it was one of those things where not until they released the first single, Life is Beautiful, and it blew up the charts, and we get a call from Alan Kovac saying, "You guys are now a band." And we're like, "No, we're not." We still fight them to this day. We don't look at us like a band. We look at us like three best friends, three songwriters, three producers, like a team.
It's like a collective.
Yeah.
Then you come together. Because you just did new stuff for Nikki's book. Yeah. I just did a big thing with Nikki in LA for his book a couple months ago. And I know that there was a companion compilation record and a couple new songs you did. And I imagine for him to do it with you and James when he wants to do something quickly and efficiently like that is probably a little easier than running it through the Motley machine and making Motley songs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've had so much fun. I mean, we'll sit and laugh our way. I mean, we write about really heavy, deep, dark, depressing things, but it's crazy how it's helped a lot of people out there get through some really tough times.
Life is Beautiful has become an unbelievably important song to a lot of people and a great song.
Yeah.
Did you know that impact that was going to have when you guys wrote that?
No, we knew we had a good song on our hand. We just didn't know it was going to connect the way it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge, huge connect there.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Just in and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
It's hard not to add a side of hot, crispy hash browns to your favorite McDonald's breakfast. It's even harder not to eat said hash browns before you get home. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hanging with DJ Ashba today, And DJ's kind of going through a little mini This Is Your Life with him, going through a, a really incredible career that continues. But before we get to what you're doing now, just going back to your collaborations with 6AM, what is it? What was it like working with Nikki as a writer? Because we all know Nikki is a great writer and prides himself on writing. When you sit down and write with him, what, how does that go? Do you, is he going to be more on the lyric side, you on the music side? Do you just feel it out? Well, because you got to have a chemistry with somebody to co-write songs, right?
Yeah.
Did, was that immediate or did you have to feel that out?
It was immediate. Me and James and Nikki, we get in a room and we literally can finish each other's sentences, basically. I mean, Nikki's phenomenal at lyrics. He's great at putting that right dark twist on a sentence to make it even more badass, you know. And he's great at that. He's great at just coming up with really cool ideas slightly out of the box, you know. And musically, yeah, we all three just grab acoustics. We literally sit in a circle, everybody has an acoustic, and we just strum, jam, and it's real fast and easy. It's the weirdest thing. You know, a lot of the records were, you know, written just us sitting around, and we never really work stuff out. We just, you know, jam on acoustics. We have a, you know, being recorded the entire time, and we'll go back and just find these little ideas that are just magic. It's like, wow, that part right there is really cool. And we'll build off of that, you know, and we'll get the 9 times out of 10, we'll do the music first, and then and then we all three kind of get in there and really hone in. But I would say lyrics, you know, that's probably his forte. You know?
Jumping to GNR for a second. How many years are you there? 5, 6 years?
I was just going on 7.
Going on seven.
Just over about 6.5, I think.
And so, the whole time you were there, the other two guitar players were Bumble and
Richard.
Richard. Yeah. So you were in a 3-guitar deal.
Yeah.
And what was the latest you ever went on? Because your era forever known for the, of course, I mentioned yesterday when you were coming on the infamous Axl interview where you sat there between us at, in Miami, which happened at like 5:30 in the morning.
Yes.
Because you guys went on at like 12:15. Yeah. But what do you, like as a band member, I know it's Axl's show, but when that was, because that's not going on now since the reunion.
No.
But what was that really about in your view? And are you sitting there like at 8 o'clock ready to go and like, you can't say anything, but you got to kill four hours. Like what was really going on in your view?
To this day, I'm not sure. I don't know if it was just his way of getting the crowd so, you know, pissed off, so when the lights go down and they hear the guitar, you know, that all that build-up energy turns into, because GNR fans are fucking awesome. They lose their minds.
They are passionate bunch.
They're passionate, they're loyal, they're I can't say enough good things about the GNR fans. I've never seen anything like it. So I don't know. I don't know if that's something that's intentional or not, but he definitely knows what he's doing.
So you guys were just waiting for the cue to go on, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But the average time was
we'd be hammered.
I know. I was at some of the shows. Yeah. I lived it.
Because we, you know, we'd start kind of pre-gaming, you know, and okay, all right, he's keep drinking. By the time you get on stage, you're just plastered. And I got to start the show going up the elevator, which is takes me up into the way above the drum set. And I start the show up there with nothing locking me in. So if I fall, like,
oh, that's right. The moment was you came up, open with Chinese, right? Yeah, and you'd play the riff. And the thing would go up.
And every time I'm like, all the crew's standing down there going, he's going to fall tonight. He's hammered.
Because you're on Jaeger for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I know. I would go to some of the shows and I would go to the bar before the show.
Yeah.
In the hospitality room or whatever. And then, you know, you're not going on till 12. You're there at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
It was like, I went to a show before you were in the band with my friend, Mike Piazza, the baseball player. It was at the Garden in New York.
Right.
And there was a VIP hospitality backstage and we were in there and He was Mike was hammered by the time the show started because it was like midnight. And we're like, what was your personal highlight in the time that you were in Guns N' Roses? Was there a moment? Was there a show that jumps out at you as a highlight moment?
Probably Rock in Rio. When we played Rock in Rio, we it was pouring down rain the whole show. He was in like this yellow raincoat or whatever, but I just remember it being fun because the whole stage had puddles everywhere, and I would just run as fast as I could and just slide, and you'd slide for about 30 feet, and I spent the whole 3.5 hours up there just literally skiing. It was probably the funnest show ever.
And Rock in Rio, known for huge crowds, yeah. And Rio and in general, yeah. insane crowds. So that had to be completely
yeah.
bonkers.
Yeah.
Did you ever attempt to write with Axl and make new music? Because in all honesty, they haven't made new music in since Chinese. You know, well, They haven't. Slash admitted the other day they haven't written yet, and yeah. they've been together with this 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Did you attempt to do things with him as far as studio stuff?
Yeah, I attempted. By nature, I'm a songwriter producer, so of course I'm gonna keep writing. And I wrote probably 8 to 10 songs, and a couple of
with Guns in mind.
With Guns in mind, yeah. But a lot of them were too Appetite sounding, and to me as a fan, that wouldn't
be a bad thing for me. And most that's, people,
me as a fan, I'm like, that's what I would want to hear.
Yes,
you know. And so I was like, I want to write something that sounds like it came right off of Appetite, you know. And I think they were a little too, they hit a little too close to home. But there's a couple where he was like, this song is dope. For whatever reason, we were touring a lot. We never got to a chance to get his, get him in the studio or whatever, but they didn't go anywhere further than just me sending him some tracks and him going, this one's dope. This one's cool. You know, Sebastian though, heard one of them. I played and for to this day, even when we were together last week, he's like, I want that fucking song. That song is insane.
He still remembered it. All three of us were at the Bruce Kulick show, Sebastian, DJ, and I. The end of GNR for you, you left the band.
Yeah.
Did you see what was coming and you left, or you were leaving anyway?
No. I'm a huge, GNR fan. The only reason I joined the band is because I have, I grew up on the music. I have a ton of respect for the guys who wrote the music. And, and Axl called me and said, hey, just want to give you a heads up. Slash is coming back, but I want you to be a part of this. And, which was a really cool phone call to get, And at the time, I was going through a lot of different things with 6 a.m. too. 6 a.m. wanted to really pick up the pace and go nuts. And, for 3.5 years, I played, 85, 90% of my parts were the Slash parts, so I didn't feel I had the brain capacity to relearn, because at this point, it's muscle memory, to relearn a 3.5 hour show differently than I've been playing for the last 6-7 years. It's going to take some work, plus I was like, if Slash is coming back, man, this is his gig. Like, I can happily step out, because it's kind of the best of both worlds. I can go be in the band I helped create with Six and Michael, and go back to, what I'm really good at doing. And that's 6 a.m. And I've never been great at playing other people's stuff. It's never been my thing, if Slash was coming back, that was like the best of both worlds. It's like, fuck, I get, we get our, most of the band back, and I can go do what I want to do too. So it worked out great. And I bowed out, I should say. And I think Richard was the guy for that slot anyway. That was more the Richard role. I think he fits that way better than I would have.
What's really interesting that I think a lot of people forget about the end of GNR or that version of GNR is that Duff was there already.
Oh, yeah.
People always forget that. It was really Slash coming back, because I saw you guys play the Golden Gods with that version with Duff.
Yep.
Because Tommy Stinson had left. Duff did like a dozen, 20 shows.
He did. He would come out and play some shows with us. Izzy came out, you know, and played a show or two, I remember, with us. And Izzy was awesome. He's also from Indiana. But he came out and brought us all presents, brought these little tiny guitar amps for everybody. So that's kind of cool.
The interesting thing about that, though, is, and I've said this many times, if you really think about it, and you saying that Axl called you and offered you to you to be a part of it supports this. He actually, what they're doing now, he actually didn't let anybody go. He just added to it.
Right.
Because Duff was already there, so Tommy was gone.
Yep.
You were given the offer. You, as you said, bowed out. Yep. But so really, it was they plugged Slash into what was there already.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. Nobody lost their gig. And I mean,
I think they brought Melissa in. I think was the only other thing.
Right.
But other than that, it's the same, pretty much same lineup.
Right.
You know.
Right. And I mean, I don't know Axl well, but I've talked to him and met him and interviewed him a couple times, and he seems to me like there's a certain level of loyalty there. Like if you are part of that machine, there might be an addition and a change, it's not going to kick you to the curb.
His loyalty is so rare to find in this industry. You know, I mean, he's a super very loyal dude, but once you gain his trust, like anything else, you know, I mean, you're in.
Right.
Like he'll have your back. He'll, you know, he's a solid dude, you know.
Yeah. So DJ and I are telling stories here during the commercial about the infamous That Metal Show interview with Axl, and DJ sitting there not saying a word, which I talked about yesterday. I don't want to open up that can of worms because I want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing now.
Oh, good.
So out of respect to your new music, because we need up the time, we could do hours on it.
Oh, yeah.
Because we interviewed everybody from the people working on the crew to DJ. Buck Cherry was the opening act. We interviewed everybody because we didn't expect to actually get Axl.
Yeah.
And then we got Axl with a side of DJ who just sat there saying, why am I here?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you saw it and the stories are endless about that legendary moment in Miami, which happened at like 5:30 in the morning. But before we run out of time, I want to give you a chance to talk about what you're doing now. Now, in all honesty, I am not an EDM guy at
all.
Not my thing. I'm a rock guy to my core. But I respect what you've done.
Thank you.
Because you've tried and you're doing something that's different. However, what I will say about what I've heard you're doing, there's a very big guitar presence to it.
Yes.
And your playing is fantastic. And I love your tone. And that mashed up, whatever the kids would say, with the EDM stuff is an interesting hybrid. Has anybody done that you're aware of?
Not like I'm doing it, I don't believe. I'm definitely not the first person to play a guitar over electronic dance music, but I definitely, you know, because I have a really kind of signature sound, you know, I didn't go into this going, hey, I want to be a DJ. I'm a producer songwriter. I love the genre. And I saw
So you are an EDM guy.
Oh yeah.
I
love going to, you know, festivals and stuff. So, and I noticed there's very little, if any, guitar, like definitely none playing from beginning to end that I know of, you know, like,
well, correct me if I'm wrong, cause I am not well versed in it. Is there any live instruments at all? It's normally a couple laptops, isn't it?
There is, but it's becoming more and more of a thing. It's kind of like the new thing. You know, you got like Timmy Trumpet out there who DJs and he'll play trumpet now and then. My thing is, how cool would it be to come out with a DJ and stick to what I do, stay true to the way I play, so you can go, oh my God, that sounds like, or that is, you know, DJ from 6 a.m. You know, not change any, stay true to the way I play, the way I do it, but find a really cool way to inject my sound into this world. And that was kind of the beginning. The idea was like, what would it sound like if I took like, you know, a Calvin Harris or a Steve Aoki and put them in a blender with Van Halen? Like, what would that sound like? You know, mainstream rock with mainstream EDM. And that was kind of the only template I had. The hardest thing about this, it took about 4.5 years to finally carve out this really unique sound. And, it's really cool. And I wanted to kind of create a new sound that if you didn't like EDM like you, you could appreciate it because there's enough rock.
Which I can't. That's exactly what I thought when I watched it, the videos, and your latest one is called, I think, Bella Ciao.
Bella Ciao.
And you hear, I mean, the guitar line through it. I mean, the melody, the tone, it sounds great.
Yeah.
And then it's up against what goes on with EDM, which is remarkably popular. It's huge. I mean, especially here in Vegas, you go down the strip, every billboard is one of these EDM guys doing this huge business. What's the response been in the early going like this for you?
Unbelievable. I went in, I told Universal, when Universal heard this new sound, they signed me on the spot. They're like, this is fresh. This is something new. We didn't know how to describe the sound that I created because it really doesn't exist. You know, I didn't have any roadmap or anybody to follow. And it was a lot of trial and error figuring it out. And there's many times where I wanted to throw my computer in the pool and just say, nobody's ever going to get what I'm trying to do. And my goal was to find a way to get re-inspired as a musician, but hopefully go out there and inspire a new generation of kids to pick up an instrument. That was my goal. You know, if I could play these festivals and one kid in that crowd looks up and goes, I want to do that for the rest of my life. That's what Eddie did to me. You know, so if I can pass that torch, you know, in rock, you know, there's very little collaboration. Me, if you look at my history, I've worked with a lot of different artists from different genres. I love that. I'm not just a rock guy. I've never looked at myself. I don't listen to just rock. You know, so one of the other big, you know, things was I want to be able to collaborate with a lot of different artists. So creating a new sound, the hard part is how am I going to front this? Because in our world, if you don't have a singer, you can't front the project. So in their world, it's like, you know, it's a DJ up there doing his thing. And it's not so much about the DJ. It's about the experience, about the lighting, the video content, the way the music makes you feel. It's more of a, you know, an experience. You know, with rock, it's more about who's in the band, who's on stage, less about the LED screens. And you know what I mean? It's kind of the opposite.
Right.
And I wanted to bring a little bit more of that from our world into the electronic dance world to where, you know, it's like a rock show, but it's a DJ with a guitar just going crazy out front.
So are you when you're making this music, are you also doing the dance aspects of it? In other words, when you say the computer, like when you hear one of these songs that you're doing, are you doing all of it in terms of, so do you have in you the ability to write and create what is traditional EDM music, and then you're bringing your guitar, you're doing the whole thing, or you're bringing an EDM guy speak?
No, I'm creating every instrument. I'm producing it, writing it. I work with another producer, a young kid, JP, and he's awesome. He does a lot of music for SNL, but he's really hip. He knows what's going on. And I've actually, you know, I'm always learning. You know, I'm the first to say I you know, the minute you feel like you know it all, you're done growing. You know, so I'm constantly, you know, searching for new technology and what the next thing is. And, but yeah, you know, everything that I'm playing my guitar to, I have sat in the studio and personally played every single kick drum and you know, my DJ has ability at that point to filter things and chop things and do stuff. But I'm out there playing live to a click in my head, just like I did my entire career, you know.
Are you getting booked on these? I mean, here in Vegas, the biggest one, EDC, there's these huge things.
That is my goal.
Are you getting booked onto that? Is that what you're working towards?
That's my goal. Like, Pasquale is the man. Like, he's
the promoter of Electric Daisy.
Yeah, and he's dope. And, you know, and we've been in talks, so I'm hoping, you know, that's a big goal and dream of mine, is to play Tomorrowland and EDC and, you know, all these cool festivals that I've always gone to, and really bring this new experience.
Have they been receptive to this new sound? Because you're bringing a rock thing into it. You know, David Lee Roth famously got up and did some mashup of Jump.
Yeah, so, with Armin van Buuren.
So is the dance community been open to your sound and what you're trying to do?
It is. And I told the label, it's going to take about four singles before anybody starts really getting this new sound and getting what I'm doing. And sure enough, four singles in, Bella Chow hits, and it just explodes on YouTube. It's doing really great. And people are finally, because it's a familiar song, a remake of an old Italian classic song, people can wrap their head around and go, oh, I get this. And we didn't know how to describe it. You know, it'd take 10 minutes on phone calls with labels going, it's so unique. How do we, what? And I walked in one day, I go, it's real simple, guys. It's guitar dance music. That's what it is. It's GDM. It's real simple.
GDM, yeah.
And that's the best way to describe it. It's guitar dance music.
Hey, we're almost out of time here. Probably got 60 seconds. Anything you want to plug, websites where people can go, hear, see?
Just go to Trunk Nation.
My audience would go crazy if I start doing EDM on Trunk Nation. But like I said, I respect you're trying to do something different, and I respect the guitar in it. And, you know, I think it's smart what you're trying to do. I think it's unique. It's really cool.
I'm never going to start another rock band probably bigger than where I've been. So it's like I'm in a really fortunate place in life where I can just be an artist and try to do something new and hopefully inspire a bunch of young kids.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, thanks to DJ for joining me. It was great to have him by the Vegas studio, and best of luck to him with his new musical project simply called Ashba. Looks like 6 a.m. will drift in and out from time to time as well, so we'll keep an eye on that. Thank you all for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday. Always free wherever you get your podcast. Thanks to Joel Pollack for putting it all together for me. And again, follow on social media at Eddie Trunk. Have a good week. Hope you catch me on the radio on volume every day, live, 2 p.m. Eastern time on Sirius XM 106. Back here next Thursday for another all-new episode. Be sure to subscribe and listen each week to the podcast. Take care. Have a good week.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.